Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we took a week off unexpectedly because I was stranded without a car for a couple of days. So I was like, I can't get back to my laptop or anything. And I don't think I gave you any details. I was just like, hey, I'm going to be out for tomorrow probably because like having problems.
No, and that's all I needed to know. Like, I was just like, okay. I mean, you kind of told me that you were having car issues, but other than that, I mean, it's just like, sometimes, you know what? You just need your, like, especially if you're, like, you know, I can tell when you're frustrated, and just, like, you sending me that text, I could feel the frustration. I was like, no, I'm not going to talk. We won't talk about it. We'll wait a little bit to actually decompress and kind of let you get it out, because I mean, you know, the last thing you want to do sometimes is, like, after you've had to tell like four different people, tell another fucking person about what happened. All I knew is like you were safe. Dude. But you
and that's
get
exactly
home.
What it, like, every person I texted or called, like, uh-huh. It devolved into this, like, well, why? Because I mean, the short version is I was headed to Columbus. All of my personal stuff still goes to my father's address because it's a permanent address. I've moved 6 times in 8 years. So I just have all my stuff mailed to his house because it's 2.5 hours away. It's fine. Yeah. So this year I had to renew my tag, of course, which I never mail in. I always just do in person. Cause I'm terrified it gets lost in the mail. I'm like, and I'll have to go down there anyway, but, yeah. I'm like, well, I got to go down there. Even if I do it by mail, might as well just do it in person. Going to go renew my tag, had to renew my license this year too. So I was like, well, I got to go do all that. I'm going to take one day, go down there, do that, get up at like 3 a.m. so I can drive through Atlanta without having to worry about traffic.
Yeah.
And Atlanta is about 1.5 hours from me. So we leave at about 4, maybe 4:30 after I get packed and get her walked and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I planned on being through Atlanta by 6 when it starts getting busy.
Yeah.
At about 5:30. My car starts just like the engine just starts revving and it won't go anywhere. Like the RPM shoot up. I get pulled off and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I stopped at a gas station for a little while, like tried to like zen myself. I'm like, okay, maybe I can get it. Like maybe I'll be okay to get to the other side of Atlanta. It'll only take 30 minutes. Nope. Got back on the 285 bypass, which is like the wild, wild west in Atlanta. There's nowhere. Like if the car breaks down on the side of the bypass, there's nothing you can't get out of your car.
Oh, fuck.
Because it's so, especially that time of day, there's so many people. Like you'll just get hit by a car because they don't care. Police don't even get on that. Like they won't get on 285 because it's dangerous for them if they pull somebody over. Like it's not even worth it because you can't do anything. It's so poorly designed. So my car starts doing it again. So I'm like, I've got to find a way to get off the bypass. I don't know where anything is in Atlanta. Fortunately, I eventually like limp it off an exit, get to a gas station and call the Kia like support roadside. Hey, stop. I'm telling my story. Meanwhile, the dog, that's what I have to put up with the whole time, is her like losing her mind. Because she doesn't understand what's going on, and that's making it more frustrating. Anyway, it was a harrowing, like nerve-wracking experience. We finally get towed to a Kia dealership 1.5 miles from where my car broke down.
Oh shit. That's Providence. That's what we call Providence. Oh man. And from everything I know, and I think we talked about a little bit, like, and this is not, but it kind of is a promotion for Kia, is that they're kind of great with their warranty, their powertrain warranty, from what I've heard. And I think that you had all but confirmed that, that like, you know, after all the car troubles, like they're going to like basically cover with the warranty, or most of it's going to be covered with the warranty.
Oh yeah. Everything except the tow. And there's I don't call it whatever you want. There's a fee for them to check out your, to like diagnose your car.
Yeah, like so, like $100 fee or something like that, right?
So it wound up with like all total, it's going to wind up costing me about $300. So to which my mom was like, I would fight them. I would get that reimbursed. What? I was like, no, they're replacing the transmission on my car, so I'm not gonna argue, like, you know.
You don't do that. That's the cost of doing that. Like, there's like most car companies will just say, nice to meet you, go fuck yourself. Yeah, like, you know, like after this, like, oh okay, well it's gonna be about $5,000 above, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, we got a bunch of cars out there, you can take a look and see, we'll give you a decent deal on a trade-in. But you know, which is where I thought I was headed. If I'm like, they tell me like $5,000 or $6,000, I might be like, what will you give me on a trade-in? Because the car's paid off. So, you know, I'm not paying for a transmission that like hopefully like in a year is not going to then break down again. You never know. So, but yeah, fortunately, it's worked out as best as it can. So, anyway,
did they hook you up with a rental?
No, they did not. I didn't even ask. Because at the time, it took them a couple of days to get it diagnosed. I mean, it's a huge Kia dealership, and when I pulled up, there were so many cars, and the lady was really nice. She was like, "I don't know how long it's going to take us to look at your car. We have so many." She said, "I can tell you it's going to be at least 2 days." And she called me Tuesday to let me know, hey, it is the transmission that is covered. Like, you're still under warranty because the car is only 4 years old. It's got less than 100,000 miles on it. You're good. She said, "But I've got to order the transmission for it. I don't have a timeline for you." So... she said, "Do you have a car?" I said, "I do have a car right now." So I'm not going to, fortunately a family member has a spare car and was like, here's the keys. So I was like, I'm not going to pester them about that if I can, you know.
And it's more money. I mean, if you really think about it, like, you know, even if they, like, they probably really won't cover it. And even if they give you a cheap $50 a day, I mean, if it takes them 3 weeks, that's still like 500, like, that's still like $400 at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
You know, this podcast brought to you by Kia. like they are actually one of the brands that I was looking at, because I don't have a car, like just as a weird kind of like, just kind of like since we, it's funny because we were just talking about screens and how all we fucking talk about here is screens. Well, let's just talk about something else for a second since we're on the car bit. Like, I don't have a car, right? Like, I haven't had a car since my Prius died on me. Like, I had a 2012 Prius that I ran into the ground, and around 2020 was the last thing the actual battery itself, the ionic battery, died. And
those things are, isn't it, it thousands of dollars to replace those?
$14,000 to be exact from Toyota. Yeah. And I'm not going to, and I wasn't going to do anything other than that. Like, you know, like I wasn't going to go to some fucking off brand place and like, oh yeah, give me a battery. No. So I just,
that's how you die in a car fire.
exactly, dude. But yeah. Let's get an off brand battery to put into my fucking, like, nothing ever good comes of putting off brand batteries into fucking anything. That's why I don't buy off brand batteries. Kids, learn your lesson. Cheap doesn't necessarily equal like better. Sometimes you need to spend a little money. But so like I haven't had a car since 2020, so it's like been 4 years. I mean, and realistically, I mean, think about it. It's the fucking pandemic. Like, you know, yeah. I didn't really need one. We only have one car, but we only have one car, and we have a great one car. Like, it's an Acura. It's an Acura TLX. It's a fucking great car. My wife bought it in like 2016 and it's been paid off. So it's like, you know, why add a car bill to the, like a car note and raised insurance. But, one of the places I did think about going to was Kia, because they just have like they're all around generally a great brand because of what they do. They don't do the normal car company stuff. Because they're like the scrappy company, right? Like, they're in competition with all these big people. And also at the same time, like a weird kind of thing, like, you know that I'm part Japanese, and like there's some really like I have some very weird cultural affectations because I'm Japanese. And one of the big things is this is something about me that I obsess about. I really like, I don't know if you know about Japanese, like there's a big component in Japanese culture, like a car culture, they're like yeah, there's the fucking drifting and shit and all that stuff. Oh, fuck that. There's this other part of Japanese culture. It's the key cars or the key trucks, and key truck is basically a mini truck. Have you ever seen these things?
Yeah.
So like, I'm obsessed with mini trucks, but the whole problem is that America won't, because of, have you heard about the chicken law and the chicken tax?
Yeah, I've heard bits and pieces from people, like I've it's come up at work, people talking about it. And,
oh, absolutely. I think because of your business, I can totally understand that, you know, fucking LBJ, fuck you for the chicken tax. Fuck you, chicken tax. Like, because like the all of these things that, so like the beautiful thing about a key car or a mini truck, a key truck is that they're sold for about $10,000 to $11,000, guys. And these cars like last forever. They're all wheel drive trucks. They're very basic. They have manual transmission. I, like probably Logan and most of my generation, that like had a dad, they taught you how to drive stick. And I know how to drive stick, and I don't care.
I don't. My dad was terrible at driving stick, so he did not teach us. He had one, but he was so bad at driving stick. So
he was a grinder then, like a literal grinder. Yeah. I got tired of driving stick, but I mean, like, for $10,000, guys, it's an all-wheel drive truck. If you just look up KEI truck, you will go down a deep hole if you are a guy that kind of likes trucks. Like, I always wanted a Tacoma or a Tundra. I never got one because they were too expensive. But now I'm seeing that the expense was worth the payment. I probably should have, because I probably still have it. I don't know. A weird tidbit about Christian Bale that I love is that he still has his same 2002 Tacoma.
Like, he has there's so many pictures of him online putting gas in that car. It's so awesome.
Right? I fucking love it. I just like look at him and I'm like, that's a dude. That's the dude. Like for a guy who's so weirdly complex about his acting and such a pampy bamby fucking motherfucker about his acting, he's very utilitarian. Like, I mean, like anytime I see him, he's in a surf shirt and jeans and sandals, and he's either carrying his kid or he's putting something into his truck. And it's the same goddamn truck. Like, that to me, like, that's the dude. And it's all to say, like, I love, but you can't get a key truck. Let me just tell you that, like, the $10,000 all-wheel drive truck that only cops out at a speed of 55 miles an hour.
You'll see the videos for anybody
who, yes,
like, if you don't want to look it up, you'll see videos of guys in, like, India or, like, any Asian, yes, country almost, and they're driving these little trucks, and you're like, we don't have trucks like that. Why did they have trucks like that?
Yep.
Like, these little bitty trucks that haul, like, just...
they haul kibble, rip.
Yeah, they would haul your food. I don't know what's up with you today. I don't. So, but yeah, like, and I that's probably the rabbit hole I went down at some point. I was like, mm-hmm, like, what are these little trucks? And
yeah,
the tax you're talking about, the chicken tax, which is such a weird way to put it, but I mean, there's a reason behind it. But yeah, it's like a 25% tax, which is,
mm-hmm,
kind of big, you know, for
a huge tax, but also, like, it's done in a way that makes it impossible for cheaper things that the world has, like a key. Like, you can actually look this up, guys, and it'll make you really upset. So just be ready. Like, if you try to go down the rabbit hole of the chicken tax, just realize that, like, there are certain things that you would probably want that are very economical. Like imagine a world with all those mini trucks. Like, nobody decide, like, everybody just decided to get, like, cheap, people that actually needed to, like, survive and actually could afford a $10,000 car. That's the thing. It is the sticker price is $10,000, and it's not just in Japan. It's all the way all over Asia. Like Logan was saying, like, it's in India. Like, they're really big in India. And these things are so well built that a lot of times, oftentimes, they end up trading them. The various guys, they end up selling them for about the amount that they paid for them, because these things are so durable, because they're created with all-wheel drive, and they're tiny and they're lightweight, but they're perfectly balanced. And the engine is on the opposite, is at the back and not in the front, because the front, it looks like, if you guys have seen the trucks, like the actual, like say, like those the Sprinter vans, how, like, they don't have the front end. Like, it's like, it's all like window.
Yeah, like, that's exactly, it's just that window and, like, the flat panel.
Yeah, that's exactly what a key truck is. It's just a very small version of it. I mean, it's literally the size of, it's probably about the size of a Honda Accord. Like, that's about as big as it is for a truck. But it just has a compartment. It's a two-seater. It's a compartment. And then it's all truck bed in the back. But the truck bed is, like, utilitarian, the way that you rent something from Home Depot, how they have the flatbed. That's all it is. It's badass. And, like, the guys in India, they're fucking wild. They'll turn that shit into something like a movable home or like a business thing.
Those videos are crazy, man.
Oh, man. Like, I whenever I want a little bit of joy because of the ingenuity of it, like, I get real happy and real fascinated by, like, feats of ingenuity, like those kinds of things, like customization, like, from dudes, like, that just, like the Indian guys, they're all, like, they're, like, the best. Like, the, like, them and the Pakistanis are, like, the best, because, like, I don't realize how much influence they have on my life. But I mean, I have, like, 5 or 6 YouTube channels that are Indian educators that just, like, whenever I need something very specific for my job, because I'm a programmer, there's these guys that are there that I just go to, and, like, they literally have hundreds of thousands of videos, and you just go in, and, like, in 10 minutes, I learn more from them than I do from any sort of, like, Microsoft approved programming, a 2-hour training session. It's like, yeah, you guys are terrible. And this is why we're going to get passed up. because we put no worth into education. But okay, they're off my grandstand. I could talk about key cars for another 2 hours.
They're pretty cool, and it's such a shame. Like, when you think about it, like, for somebody running, like, you know, most people like us, we're not going to have like two vehicles, like a truck and a car, or, but like, say if, I mean, I live close, pretty close to some farmland. Like if you're running some kind of farm, like you need a vehicle to haul things. You don't always need a Ford F-350, you know, like that can pull a fucking tractor out of the mud. Sometimes you just need a little like flatbed kind of truck that you can throw whatever in and haul it. And like, it would be great to have a vehicle like that, that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. And also, you know, gets more than 8 miles to the gallon, and you can't really get that here. I mean, you have small trucks here, but
yeah, like, well, you have like the Polaris's.
Yeah, it's just not the same, you know.
No, it's not. It's not, like, because like the Polaris's are like 15 to 20 grand, like in the ones that you would want, and they're just not big enough, right? Yeah. Like, I've seen them. My dad has one because, I mean, he lives on like he lives on the spread, like, you know, like he lives on the spread close to do you know the place where Bill and Ted die? The place where every Star Trek, like, he literally lives like not even a half a mile away from it. Like, it gets crazy. Like my dad, like, but my dad has a horse ranch. Like, he always wanted to be a cowboy. Like, imagine that. Like you get your dream. Like, he got his dream. Like, you know, like, he went through a rough patch, but like at the end of the day, he ended up like becoming basically a horse hand. Like, he fucking thinks this, like, I think that my dad saw Dances with Wolves and it fucking rewired him for the rest of his life. fucking just rewired him for the rest of his fucking life, man. Like, you know, big Tatanka, like, you know, he fucking, like, he thought he was Kevin Costner. I think he still does in a weird way, because if you ever met my dad, he's kind of like he's a little bit shorter than me. Like, I'm like 5'11", right? My dad is like 5'8". He's actually a lot shorter than me. It's 3 inches, but he kind of walks like Costner from the Yellowstone. He actually, like, when I first saw the Yellowstone thing, I was like, no, I don't need to see this. This is my fucking dad. This is like literally my fucking dad. Yeah, not
watching a TV show about my dad.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's one of the main reason why I didn't want to watch Magnum P.I. because, like, Magnum P.I. is literally my dad. I mean, my dad looks like Tom Selleck. Like, if I showed it to you, you're like, oh yeah, that's like Tom Selleck in his 80s. Literally what Tom Selleck is now. But, yeah, like, my dad has one of those Polaris's, right? And it was fucking expensive. Yeah. And, like, it's durable, but, I mean, it's not big enough to hold a bunch of stuff, right? Like, you know, like, from where the hay barn is to where the horses are, like, he can only put, like, two bales of like, you know, shit on there. But if you had one of those mini trucks, I guarantee goddamn to you, he'd just fucking throw a bunch of them on and a fucking donkey on there and fucking like drive it up to where his fucking horses are and not have a problem. But I mean, like I said, we can't buy key cars here. Yeah, we went on a really weird dive on this one, didn't we?
Jumping into like what we've been doing. I've been in a like funk because of my car. I've just been in like, I don't feel like doing anything. So mostly this week I sat around and watched a lot of TV, a lot of one show specifically, which we've never talked about. I don't even know if you've watched it. I've never seen it. People wouldn't stop recommending it to me. So this week I started watching The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
I have. And man, that is a fucking beast of a show. Like, how excited are you?
Halfway through season two.
Okay. Okay. So first thing, how excited are you for Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane?
Kill it. She's going to kill it.
Like, I don't care the age difference. I just care about the fact that they literally got the perfect person to play a version of 40s era Lois Lane. Like, her delivery, the way she, like, just everything, dude. Like, oh my God. Okay, so So you're a season and a half in. Like, what do you, okay, so like overall thoughts, and then what specifically do you love about the show? If you love it, like, I don't know, you could not love it at all. You could just be like, Adam, it's not that great.
No, I was, by episode three, I was like, I love this show. I'm not the hugest fan of Amy Sherman-Palladino. I was into Gilmore Girls for a little while, but like it kind of became too repetitious for me. it was one of those like WB shows. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of, they're built on that like teen angst thing. But I dug the few seasons that I did watch. I just got really bored with the will they, won't they in every single relationship on that show. This show doesn't really have that, at least not so far.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. Trust me. I've seen it all the way up to the last season, and we just haven't gotten to the last season because, to be quite honest, I don't know if I want it to end. Yeah. Like, it's that great of a show. It's she's batting at a different level. Like, even though Gilmore Girls is like to everybody is like this perfect show, right? Like, a lot of women like they obsess about it. Like, I shouldn't say just women, like men and women, like some people like obsess about it the way that some people will obsess about Buffy or Taylor Swift.
Yeah. I get it. Like, I do get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think her sensibilities, writing wise, work so much better in this era. It feels like I'm watching like a Howard Hawks TV show. Like,
yep.
You know, when he was doing his more like romantic comedy kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
And it's almost always pitch perfect. So I'm halfway through season two. So they're in like the Catskills. I'm not loving that. Like, it's funny, but like the kind of like schemes that they've come up with, like to like still include, what's her name? Her manager. I was like, that feels a little like, square peg in a round hole.
Kind of thing.
But I mean, it's still cute and funny and has that, you know, sensibility to it. So.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I do. Okay. So I have to ask about a couple of things. Like, so, it's Alex Borstein that plays, her Alex manager. Borstein,
yeah.
Who
is so great. Like,
Susie is so amazing.
I'm so glad that, like, I'm happy for her relationship with Seth MacFarlane and all the, all the money it's brought her just, like, hooking up with that guy, not physically, but, like, just being like, oh, okay, like, he likes what I can do, you know, she came off Mad TV, you know, she's been in comedy forever, but... like she just doesn't get a lot of love live action wise, you know. Mm-hmm. It's her voice that makes her so unique, but this is so like perfect for her, you know.
No, absolutely. No, she nails it. And as you go on in later seasons, there's a lot of shit that happens. Like, even in season two, like the later parts, it gets very complicated. And what I love about the show is how complicated it gets with humans and what you expect, because you expect it to go a certain way and it doesn't, which is nice. Go ahead.
Maisel or Midge or whatever she wants to call herself.
Midge.
She has like 19 names. I just watched an episode. I've been watching them like in chunks, so it's hard to remember. Yeah. But they're sitting at a diner. It's in season two. And she's like going off about like just her life in general. And Alex Borstein's character is like kind of entertaining it, and then finally just loses her shit, and she's like, I know that this means like you're gonna be okay whether this works or not, but like I don't have money to eat. Like, I'm sleeping at the bar. Like,
yeah,
there's a guy who wants to kill me because I'm representing you. Like, my life is like so much worse than yours, and I'm so sick of hearing you complain about shit that I dream of being able to complain about. And like, she hasn't really understood the disparity there. Like, she's been kind of like, and rightfully so, like, so obsessed with like what a tragic turn her life has taken. And while it is tragic for her, it's just like, it's not the end of the world that the people in your social circle look down on you. Like, I don't have a place to live. So
like, and that's the thing that like really, really separates this show, is that it takes those care with the side characters. Like, so like my favorite character in that is Abe, is Tony Shalhoub's character, her father.
Abe is fantastic. Like,
oh my God, Abe and Moshi, fucking Kevin Pollak. Oh my God.
I've always, always loved Kevin Pollak, and this is kind of a perfect vehicle for him, because he gets to be big without it feeling like he's too big for the part. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like he's just coming over the top. Like, he gets to be over the top. Like, the currently what's going on in where I'm at in season two is like, their son has discovered that the business is in shambles, basically.
Yes.
Because of his mother's like weird fucking accounting, and that they've been like hiding money all, and she's got like all these treasure maps to where they've hid money because they don't trust the banks. And it's just like, it's so ridiculous. But also, like, if you take two steps back, like, and think about where they're at, what year they're in, and everything that's happened coming up to this, like, of course they don't trust the banks. Like, these are people who were there, like, during the Great Depression. Like,
well, and heard about what happened with... like, so like they don't ever they talk about it a little bit, but like about what happened during the Holocaust. Like, this is very kind of like, because this is 1956 or 57, this is only like 15 years ago. Like, this would be like, guys, this is like the analogy of like something like the Holocaust happening like in 2008. Like, that's a big fucking deal. Like, it's still there. Like, it's still like shockwaves. His mother, played by Carol Aaron, oh my God, she is so good. Like the both the mothers, so like her mother, Miriam, Rose, played by Marion Hingle.
I love her. I've always like truly, truly enjoyed her. Even on a show like Two and a Half Men, you know, which was, you know, kind of like, but this, she's just like, it's another level of excellent. The arc that starts season two, where they go to, she leaves and goes to Paris, and they follow her, and like that whole thing, and like Tony, Abe knew that version of her. Like, that's the person he fell in love with.
Fell in love with, yes,
but,
yes.
Midge has never seen her mom like that. And so, like, it's terrifying to her that, like, just that her mom is a person that enjoys, like, these kinds of things, or that can live, like, in a like a roach infested apartment in Paris, you know? It, like,
no, absolutely.
It's a total shell shock to her. And one of the other things I'm really, really appreciating about the show is that, like, Joel's character is so, like, I don't want to like this guy.
Yes.
And every time you start to like him, they give you another reason to really not like him.
Yep.
But, well, like, it's also really difficult to not kind of understand where he's coming from, you know?
True. But at the same time, like, I can't abide by a guy who fucking sat there and stole Bob Newhart's bits to make himself think he's fucking funny.
Yeah, that was, like, when you start off with that, I'm just like, oh, fuck this guy. But then, like, by season two, I'm just like, I still don't really like him, but, like, I understand what he's going through and has had to go through. And so, like, I kind of feel for him. Like, I really, really enjoyed the moment where, like, he just walked in to do this presentation and was just like, I quit. Like,
I quit.
Fuck this. This is not for me. This is not who I want to be. I fucking quit, you know? I like the moment that ends season one where he inadvertently sees her doing her, you know, impromptu stand up, whatever thing, you know, and is kind of forced to look at it from a, like, at first he's furious and then, like, he's just like, but she's really good at it. And, you know, they have a conversation at some point, I think in season two, where he tells her, he's like, do you want to quit? If you don't want to quit, I don't want you to quit, but I can't reconcile. Like, I can't be in a relationship with somebody who would then goes on stage and makes me the butt of all the jokes. Like, I just can't do that. And I understand that. Like, you know, I would hope to at some point be able to, like, evolve past feeling that way and understand it's just jokes, but there's always truth in that humor. And, you know, yeah, knowing that the person that you share a life with is going to go, you know, make fun of you on a stage at some point, like once or twice a week, that's a hard thing for you. That's a hard hit for your pride to take. No matter how humble you think you are, that's a hard, hard hit. So, like, I kind of understand that, you know? Yeah, it's just, it's such a good show. I'll probably be done with season two by the end of the weekend. So I've just been burning through it. I'm really, really enjoying it.
One of my favorite things about season two, and you've gotten to Zachary Levi because you're in the Catskills, right?
I started watching the first Catskills episode and it was not grabbing me. So I paused it and just was like, I'm gonna come back to this when I can kind of more focus on it. But yeah, I know he's coming.
He is like Gary Cooper great in that show. Like
is he comes the person in that her mom is trying to set her up with?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I got to where she's like, I know the perfect girl for him. I was like, I bet this is gonna be Zachary Levi's character.
Dude, but he plays it like Gary Cooper, man. Like Gary Cooper in the midst of his, like, how can I put it? Like, it's like Gary Cooper in the middle of his early era, like, or even like Cary Grant. It's like this weird kind of like, I know I'm a, like, it's like to see, like it actually kind of pushes everything in the, it excels everything. And it kind of gives, Joel, it kind of gives Joel the kind of punch in the dick that you really wanted him to have when you realize, like when it comes out that he was cheating on her, like the thing that I always felt like was instantly for me, it's like, Maisel, like, you fall in love with her. Like, you literally, I don't care if you're a guy or a girl, you fall in love
with
her.
Yeah, you really do.
Like, from the moment that you meet her, it's like, holy shit. Like, she's like a superhero. But she doesn't feel like she's not without her faults. And I will tell you, season three, it's all about her faults. Like, don't think that they, like, you know, like, Amy Sherman Palladino, just like, you know, like she's done in all the rest of her stuff, she doesn't keep her on a high, mighty, pious kind of thing. And she does some fucking stupid, stupid things in season three.
I mean, she's already done stupid. In season two, yeah. she basically sabotages that girl's wedding, like, inadvertently. But it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, there's a lot more of that. And, yeah. Like, in season three, it's very interesting, but, it's like you see her and you automatically dislike Joel when you find out that he's cheating on her. It's like you just didn't have a big enough ego to take, like, and that's the weirdest part about the show. That's what intrigued me is that Midge doesn't have, like, she doesn't have a successful career or anything, but he's still like this sniveling shit that looks down on his wife because his wife took like the confines of her life and made it great. Right. Like, yeah. Like that's the thing about Midge, like that I loved that they created about her is that she could take anything. She could take anything, look at it and go, okay, I'm going to do this, not just to the best of my abilities, but to the best abilities that anybody could do. And then creates this like, amazingness out of whatever, right?
Yeah. I agree, I maybe it's just the kind of person I am, because like this happened with Ted Lasso, because when there's a character in Ted Lasso who takes a turn, and every yes. person that watched the show was like, oh fuck that guy, and I was the only person I knew that was like, I don't. Hey, hey, God, come here. Somebody slammed a car door outside. God, calm down. Sorry.
That's all good, man.
But yeah, that, like I look at Joel and I'm like, yes, what you're doing is wrong, and the way you're doing it is wrong. But like, I also understand like how frustrating it is to watch somebody be able to do that. And meanwhile, like you have this kind of silver spoony life, and it's still just shit. Like he's not able to spin gold the way other people are.
No, not even close.
I think it's finding out and seeing that his dad is not the person his dad has kind of blowharded pretended to be for so long, that like they don't have it together and their shit is falling apart very, very quickly. And him having to step up and be like, oh, like you're not the superhero you pretended to be, like,
yeah,
I can do this, and not that he's not gonna backslide or whatever, but like, yeah, and it's like, it's why he sabotaged his own life. Yep. Like they don't really delve too deep into it, but like, you know, the affair wasn't anything other than a form of him sabotaging, because he does not care about that girl. Like,
no,
he really, really doesn't. And, you know, she very, very quickly becomes a thing of the past. You know, he doesn't care about his job. Like, you know, and it's him. I don't know. I just find him a really, really fascinating character. Like, yeah, I'm always, you know, drawn to good villains anyway. And I think he's a very, very like he's the kind of villain you need, one that you can understand why
Yeah,
they're doing the things that they're doing.
he's literally the Thanos of he's literally the Thanos of fucking of rom-com, like, you know, rom-com dramedies, like, you know, which is very, you know, that's kind of accurate, where, like, he's not a villain. He's just a man that makes poor decisions based off of ego, right? Like,
yeah.
But I hate to say that they gussy it up, but they definitely take it to a point where it's human. Like, every character is human. They have their faults. They have their good. They're just as great with the countering of their worst flaws. And every single one of them has a worst flaw, and it comes out in, it may not be the first season or the second season, but like throughout the series of the show, it really, really does. And yeah, I'm curious to see how you, like, as you dive into more of it and you start seeing what happens with Midge in season three, because, like, you know, so far she has been very much like walking on feathers. Like, there's been issues, but she's found her way around it, right? On some of these things in three, there are going to be no crafty turn, right? Like, it's just going to be, you fucked up, and you fucked up big. And so what do we do? So yeah, like, I'm fairly certain that it's going to continue on and go up and higher and higher for you in regards to all of this stuff. Like, I'm very interested in knowing what you think. Yeah, like, now you're in on the secret about why, like, you know, it's no secret. Like, I mean, James Gunn is a master at what, if there's anything that I feel like James Gunn is a masterful at, it's casting.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I heard Rachel Brosnahan, I was like, cool. That's as close to a Coen Brothers, like a person that's been trained by the Coen Brothers as you could possibly get. Like, she is fucking just like, you know, yeah. Like, it's like one of those things where she just like she got plopped out of like 1945 and she'd been working with Howard Hawks and just got plopped right into into the modern era. Right.
Yeah. She's so good. I'm by the time we record next week, there's no tell, I might be done with the whole damn show.
Yeah,
because I've just, you know, I've eschewed watching basically everything else. The only other things I've done is a coworker gave me my first ever manga. I'm reading my first ever manga. The one thing I didn't mention, it was my birthday last week. So,
yes. Okay. Happy birthday. I completely forgot about that. Yeah. Happy birthday, dude.
Yeah. I mean, dealing with all of the other stuff, I was just like, I don't care about my birthday. But, last Thursday, my last day of work before vacation, our coworker, she's like, I got you something for your birthday. I was like, oh, okay. She was like, I know you like Stitch, and I saw this, so I had to get it for you. And it's, there's a Stitch manga series called Stitch and the Samurai.
Oh, okay. And how is this?
Tokyo Pop put out a collection of the entire series. I've never read manga. It's really difficult to force yourself to read right to left, back to front. It's taken some getting used to, so I'm reading it a little bit slower, but fortunately it's very, very fast paced. It's an interesting concept, because all it is it takes the Lilo and Stitch story, and instead of Stitch escaping and landing on modern day Earth, he lands in
feudal Japan. Like,
feudal Japan. And
okay, this
samurai warlord guy finds him, and they all just think he's a blue raccoon. And
that is hilarious.
But this, like, ruthless warlord dude becomes obsessed with the blue raccoon and what he is and what he's doing, and like, just it's funny, and it's meant to be funny that they take this guy who literally before Stitch shows up is like, we're gonna march in there, we're gonna slaughter these people, we're gonna put their heads on spikes, you know, just that kind of thing. And he's just like, now all he wants to do is hang out with this little blue raccoon and like pet its belly, and like all his men are just like, what's happening? Like,
oh my god, dude, that's hilarious. That is hilarious.
It's very, very cute. It's funny. It's an easy read. It's just like, I'll lose my place because I'll start like, I'll get a few pages in and then I'm like, oh wait, no, I'm reading this backwards.
Yeah.
So it's a hefty size. It's like 500 pages. The complete set. But it's very like, every page is like simplistic four panels, so it's not like a super complicated read, not a lot of dialogue. It's very, very art driven, and the art is fucking fantastic.
I mean, mangas are meant to be read very quickly. So, like, I mean, at least from what I remember, like when I was heavily into it, I don't read them as much as I do, like, used to anymore, because it's a heavy duty investment, because like, they're each like $15 a pop or $14.95 a pop. And some of these, like the last one I read was the complete series. I got through the complete series of Attack on Titan. Okay. And I used Comixology for that, because I, even though like we've talked about, like, you know me and I love physical copies of it, but when it's like, you know, 40 or 50 like of the mangas, and they're all $14 a piece, that's a hefty investment. Whereas like Comixology, I think when the first live action movie came out, they actually had a deal on it for like $100 for the entire series. And I mean, like, the entire series is like 5,000 pages, guys.
Yeah.
But it's like, when you read it, it goes quickly, because it's designed, once you start getting your head into the way that it's written and the way that it's designed, it becomes a very quick thing where you can look at the page, and like you said, it's four panels. It doesn't really change. It may go to six panels. It may have a splash page, but it's really kind of very simplistic in the way that they do it. And it's meant to be read quickly, like almost like you're flipping the pages. Like, it's like, it becomes like this whole thing of motion, right? Cause there's a lot of motion blur in
they specifically do that in the bottom corner of this collection. There are little Stitch drawings, and it's a flip book. So like, if you flip,
nice.
Like, you'll see Stitch like do all these things. It's very like cute thing to add to it. In the story, I'm about halfway through. Jumba and Pleakley just showed up, and it's to add to the like, that's kind of funny. They have a device that like erases people's memories, very Men in Blackish, and so they were using it like in their alien form.
Okay.
When people would find them, to like erase their memories so they wouldn't remember. And something happens and they accidentally used it on themselves. And then these villagers discovered them, brought them back to the village, thought they were husband and wife. And so now they're like living domestically as like husband and wife, and do not know that they're aliens. Like,
oh my god, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
oh my god.
but yeah, it's definitely an interesting experience reading manga for the first time. At least I would imagine if I tried this with something I'm not like remotely interested in, like Attack on Titan, or certainly not One Piece, because that would take me 20 years to read, but you know, Dragon Ball or something like that. Although I did kind of like Dragon Ball, the show.
Well,
you know, yeah, stuff like that, like, I'd probably lose interest pretty quickly.
It's hard because it's like there's certain things that are like they're like you know, there's mangas out there that are like truly like there's like epic storytelling in them, right? I've finished, like, for the most part, like the ones that I start, I finish. Like I finished Akira. Like that was a mountainous read. That has nothing to do with the movie. Like the movie is almost like the only comparison I can make is the movie is 2001. And I honestly believe this, like for my generation, I feel like Akira is like the 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like if you've seen it, right? Like the mind expanding, mind blowing, like sci-fi movie that has no, like, you know, that will be discussed about its ending for a very long time, but it's, anime form or its manga form is so different. It's so much about revolution and the Japanese society, and like it's like coming to grips with, like, very much like what Godzilla is about, coming to grips in the nuclear age and what happened and the occupation. It's very heady stuff, and it's nothing like that in the anime, right? Cowboy Bebop, I finished that, and that's very similar to what it is, but it's still like it's a huge investment. Yeah. But again, like some of these guys turn this shit out in a month. Like some of these animation guys, like some of these like they'll make a manga in like literally like it's like comes out every other month. Like the like you were just talking about whatchamacallit, not One Punch, but what is it called? One Piece.
Yeah.
Like that has like 700 issues, yeah, or 700 individual mangas that are all like 300 pages long. It's like, Jesus. But I'm glad that you're enjoying your first manga. Like, and again, like I always am like one of those, I'm of the theory that, no one ever really, like, you know, you could dip your toe into it, and if you don't like it, you don't like it. And if you don't want to invest, you don't want to invest. It's like, it's not a big deal if somebody doesn't do this stuff, right? Like, if it's your first experience, it's a joyous one, and then it becomes a thing where it's like, okay, that was cool. I don't need to add more into my life. You know, it is what it is, right? Like, yeah, you know, everybody dips their toe into something sometimes, and it's fun. So, yeah, no, absolutely. I'm actually kind of like, that sounds like a fun manga. I might actually have to kind of check it out and see.
Yeah, I did appreciate that, like, you know, it's pretty hefty, and it's a hardcover book, 500 pages, and it's got like a $20 price tag on it, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, if you bought something like an American comic that was close to that page count, I mean, you're gonna spend $60. So yep. Of course it's smaller, it's quicker read, like you're talking about. It's meant to be read fairly quickly, but like it's still enjoyable and doesn't cost an arm and a leg. So I kinda see like the appeal of this, like, I hate to call it disposable entertainment, but you know, that's kind of what it's meant to be. You know?
Yes, it is. Like, no, absolutely.
Yeah, that's where comics started, and you know, now we're at comics cost $5 a piece, you know, and it's just like, yeah, that's fucking insane. But so I'm still playing Spider-Man, but I've been taking little breaks in between playing Spider-Man to play. I finally finished off Mario Wonder. Which is great. And then so I booted up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge.
Oh yes, the retro console, the report over to, yeah. How is it? How's the gameplay? I'm very curious about that one.
So if you enjoyed the arcade game,
mm-hmm,
then like you have to buy this game. You have to buy it. It is a must play if you are a fan of the Ninja Turtles arcade game.
Okay.
Like, it is fun. It's got that frustrating factor that the arcade game had.
Yeah, like it was made to it was designed to like
eat your fucking quarters. Yes. Mm-hmm. this fortunately has a difficulty rating where you can like lower the difficulty so that, you know, you're not burning through your lives. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting added components to it. There's certain collectibles you can get in the levels. There's challenges like completing a level without damage. You know, something like that. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm pretty sure there's an online component to it where you can get online and play with other people because there's a function, it's called Party Up. And, if you click on it, it says like find other players. I haven't done it. I've just been playing through solo, but I do know you can play multiplayer like the arcade game. So if you have, you know, a fellow gamer, in your house, like your wife, for example, I don't know that she games, but you know, you get two controllers, sit down and like go through it.
Just like the arcade.
So
yeah. You get to, that's nice. I like that.
So, you choose your different players, of course. It's got a lot of really, really cool retro things. It makes me want to go back and play the arcade game. Although every time I die, I'm like, yeah, this is why I don't play the arcade game because I would just get my ass. I don't think I ever made it past New York City in the winter, like the weather thing where it's like, I don't think I ever made it past that level.
you and me both, brother. You and me both.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've been, and it's a very quick play. Like, I don't know what the cost of the game for the Switch is right now, but if it's under $30, it's absolutely worth it. The levels, like, are pretty easy to play, pretty quick to play. It's not a huge time commitment, and you can cut because I like the games where I can play a level and put it down and just be like, oh, I'll play another level tomorrow, where it doesn't feel like I'm gonna get sucked in. Which is what happens with like Spider-Man.
The Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah.
Shredder's Revenge, right?
Yeah.
I might actually buy it for PS5 because PS5, it's $31 as opposed to the Switch, which is $35. I mean, it's like basically the list price.
I can't imagine the gameplay is any different. So.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it doesn't look like it is like, and also I have the other one that I can, my portable, my PlayStation portable that I can play it on. Oh man. You got the Shredder's Revenge. You didn't get the Cowabunga.
No, the Cowabunga collection. No, I didn't.
Yeah. Okay. Does that actually have it, or is that just all the Nintendo games
I think
that we
that's
play?
Just the old NES. I think it's Ninja Turtles, Ninja Turtles arcade game, and Turtles in Time. And maybe, I forget what, there was like a fourth one, I think.
Yes, there was. Okay, well, no, I like this, totally fucking looks like the arcade game. Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to buy this. Okay. Yep. All right. Let's see. Good things. So
trying to see what the Cowabunga collection has in it.
It has all the NES ones. I was actually looking at it.
Oh, okay.
But like all the terrible NES ports that they said were ports, but they really weren't. That's what they have. I was not a fan. I was like weird kind of thing is that I was never a fan of the NES Turtles games. I loved the coin-op because it kind of felt like it looked like the Turtles, like the animated series, right? It didn't look like the one on the NES looked so jaunty and so weird. It looked like a off-brand, like, you know, it's like the meme. I want the Ninja Turtles. We have the Ninja Turtles at home. And then the Ninja Turtles are like, just shit. I actually, like, I just finished a game, which was a really quick game, which was very interesting. And then I also started a new game, like not a new game, but an old game. I finished a game. It was only maybe 5 or 6 hours of gameplay. It's called the Trek to Yomi. And it was a badass game. Like, this game is a samurai game. It's set in the samurai world, but here's the concept of the game. The concept of the game is that the style of the game is that it's done in black and white, like a Akira Kurosawa samurai movie. And it's based off of the Unreal Engine. So it's basically this like kind of side scroller, but with style, where it frames every movement that you make and you go across the screen is framed like a different, like it's framed and edited like a movie. And it's got like, it's like black and white. It's done with crackle and pop because it's like an old, it's like meant to invoke like an old samurai movie. And it's about this samurai that you play that ends up being like on your first mission, you end up dying and going to Yomi, which is like the Japanese equivalent of like purgatory, where you have to find your way and you're like, you know, find your way like to heaven, right? And so like his trek through Yomi is to get back to Earth to avenge himself. And it's just like a badass little game. It's the fighting, like it's a fight game, so because you get samurai sword and different other weapons, but it's very kind of Ninja Gaiden of the 90s, but done with a lot more like with heavier graphics. So it's like side scroller and you got all these different ninja weapons or like these weapons. It's badass. Like 5-6 hours of commitment. I bought the game on a whim because it was literally for the PS5 or the PS4 version, which plays on your PS5. I bought it for like $7, like a physical copy of it for $7. And so it was like, oh, low risk, low reward. But it ended up being one of those things where I spent, like I said, 6 hours. It was hella worth the time and the effort. And then I started Rogue Squadron, like from the PS4. I didn't play it. So I got to I started playing it. I'm about 7 hours in on the story campaign. This one was designed to be online play, but it does have that storyline, which I think consists of maybe 20 missions. But this one's actually unique. It's actually fun because you play, like, you have no choice in it. You play both. Okay, so like the concept is actually like I didn't know what I was expecting, but it takes place, but it makes sense when you hear it takes place post Endor. So like, we're like right at, like we're in the time of the Mandalorian, about a year out, the New Republic has been formed. The Empire's remnants are still there. And basically you play a New Republic fighter pilot and also an Imperial or a former Empire, because it's before the New Order has come around, pilot. And you go on missions, you go back and forth, like you do two missions as the Republic fighter and then you do two missions as an Imperial fighter, a fighter pilot. And the story that they're telling is very interesting because it involves a couple of, I won't ruin it for people if they're intrigued by it and they want to know about it, but like, needless to say, like there's a lot going on post Empire, like post Endor. That's actually really fun. It's a really fun game because you get to play different. You're not just stuck in Republic or Imperial fighters, and you get to change. You get to stock your own thing. It's a fairly easy game to play, and it's a lot of fun. I never thought that I would find fun in like an Imperial fighter pilot, but like there's a funness to it because of how easily you can get shot down. Even in the easier modes, because like I tried it in multiple different modes, and yeah, I mean it's just like you think you get dinked a couple of times and you end up blowing up, But it's a lot of fun, and the and it's not too difficult, but it also carries a story. You got a few surprises. Like I'll give you one of the things is that you're the general that you're under is General Syndulla, and she actually makes appearances, and it's Vanessa Marshall's voice, so it's kind of badass. If you're a fan of Rebels, or you're a fan of the non live action versions of Star Wars, like it goes deep into lore in the best way possible. So I'm very much so enjoying that game. Very much so. And I think you can pick it up for fairly cheap now because it's a PS4 game.
I'm pretty sure I have it, and I just never cracked it open. So. Oh.
And it's nice. The PS5 really makes it like super, like the processing engine does, like, you know, it's not heavy load times. It's pretty lightweight. And it just shines on the PS5. Like, I really am enjoying it. And like, unlike some Star Wars games, it has the Williams score. So like when you're playing, you're like playing to like the Imperial like themes, and you're playing to the Rebel themes. It's really great. Like, I really enjoyed it, or I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah, I'll have to make sure. Like, I've got to go back to Miles Morales and play that game. And then I'm going to, before I buy any more games, I'm going to try to not go back, like, all the way back and play all the games I just never got around to playing. But at least for my more recent consoles, like, I have a handful of PS4 games I never even like booted up. So many, well, not so many, but definitely five or six Xbox One games that I just never, like, I bought and just never played. So, I'm gonna try to rectify that. While we're talking video games, we can, we got to see a bunch of trailers this week. And one of them was a trailer for a video game called Marvel 1943, The Rise of Hydra. And it's coming from Skydance Studios. Mm-hmm. It's based off a miniseries from like 2010 called Captain America and the Black Panther, The Flags of Our Fathers. And it's set in 1943, so it's Captain America, Black Panther, and I get why they're like teasing Wolverine, but like clearly Wolverine,
yes,
like fighting like through like superhero missions in mm-hmm. Nazi Germany or Nazi occupied. Yeah.
Germany. Yeah. This game trailer fucking rocks, man. Like, just the concept of it, I love the fact that Cap is kind of a dick and kind of not, like, he's like, who is this?
It's very much Soldier Cap, you know?
Yes, it is. It's very much Soldier Cap. I wonder if we're going to get Bucky in it because it's set at that time, but I also wonder if it's going to be post-Bucky. Like, you know, post, like, pre Winter Soldier, like, if that's the era, like, because we're talking about it in that era. But, like, the whole concept of it being, like an Indiana Jones-style adventure with superheroes is kind of great. Like, I kind of love this, like, everything about the trailer I fucking loved. Yeah. And I just thought to myself, you know, we'd probably, like, there's a world in which we would get this as a movie, and it would be like Chris Evans, like the sequel, like if they had just been a little bit more crafty and not had put him into the ocean.
Yeah. We would have gotten this sequel with like a pre T'Challa Black Panther, maybe T'Chaka, yes. I would assume. And, you know, introduced, like James Howlett, Logan, Wolverine, whatever you want to call him, like introduce that character in this way. And I imagine because this is not going to be cinematic, canon. Because it's a game, we might see other characters of that era, a la Nick Fury, the Howling Commandos, like all of that stuff. I assume we're going to probably at least see glimpses of that, if not like full on see those characters. I did a little, like, after I sent you the trailer, I did a little not deep dive, but digging on it, and I saw, very happy to see that the story as being at least co-written by Mark Bernardin, a guy I genuinely enjoy anything he does. Like, he's written for television, mm-hmm. he's written for comics, he does podcasts, like, just anything he does, I genuinely enjoy. I think he's very, he's insightful, but he also understands, like, the, like, that it needs to be fun. So that gives me a lot of hope. As long as the gameplay isn't too far off from what we see in the trailer, then I'm truly, truly excited for this. I know they're using the Unreal Engine, and it's developed by what's her name, Amy Hennig, who used to work with Naughty
Dog.
She worked with Naughty Dog forever.
And she left because of her fucking Star Wars game got canceled, which I'm still. Her Star Wars game would have been badass. Like, I don't even have to know. I don't even have to know what the gameplay was. I just know, I mean, she was a big part of the reason why, like, Uncharted is such a fun series. So I can only imagine that it's going to be maybe a combination of that along with, like, I think the gold standard, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you feel the same way, but Insomniac is the gold standard for, like, shoot 'em up MMOs, like, not MMOs, but, like, big world things.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man, like, I think that they set the bar pretty high for playability, because that's the thing that I feel, as I get older, the thing that I want is fun gameplay. Yeah. Like, and I think that the Spider-Mans are, like, the level of it, right? And I hope that they bring the same thing to Logan, or to Wolverine, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, me too. Which we'll probably start seeing stuff for that soon, yeah. I would guess, because it's 2025. So,
I've heard that we might be getting it sooner because everybody wants to. Like, it's all going to depend on GTA 6. Like, and I know that that sounds so stupid, but I mean, that thing just got delayed, so people might be pushing towards their thing to get it in 2025, so that you're like, you know. I'm one of the few people that I'm not a GTA fan. Like, I'm just not. I'm just, it's like, it's okay. Like, whatever. You've spent 10 years on this thing. Like, this thing better, like, make my coffee for me, right? Like, but it won't. And it's not. And I think it's overkill. But anywho, like, I've heard that because GTA is, like, the beast that nobody wants to deal with, like, them pushing to 2026 could indeed shift other gaming things to push their thing to 2025 or even early, late 2024 to get the jump so that people are actually buying their games and not just looking at, like, just playing obsessively GTA 6, right? But anywho, like, yeah, we should be seeing some stuff more than that, like, teaser trailer that we saw last year. I think even that, it was like at the beginning of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know video game stuff takes for, I mean, when you look into it, this game was announced in late 2021, 2022. And
yes,
this is where we're at. Like, this is the footage that they're like, oh, we can release this. I mean, I'm sure there's like a version of the game, obviously, but the games take so long. Stop barking. I don't know what it's, her deal is today.
You know, she on edge. She on edge. yeah, like, it's all to say that I'm very much so looking forward to this one. Like, this one is going to be another one, like, that just to keep your eye on, because, I feel like it's weird because it's like, I didn't like the first, like, I didn't like the Avengers game. Did you play that on PS4?
I have it, but I didn't play it. I picked it up for like $10 or something. I was like, I'll buy it. Maybe I'll play it one day. And I just, just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, it's not great. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I feel like the gameplay is not there for me. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot, like, again, it's like, that's always my fear, is that the gameplay, like the actual mechanics of it, are going to be things that I don't like. And like, you know, I can take a lot of stuff. I just cannot take like bad gameplay. Like, just bad gameplay itself is just one of those things where I'm just like, nope, can't do it. See you guys. I can't do this. I stopped playing a couple of games we've talked about because of bad gameplay. I can't do it. I just can't do it. Like, it's one of those things where it's just like, nope, not going to do it. It's not my thing. And I'm not going to shit on it. I'm just going to just say, it's just not my thing. So yeah. Speaking of things that we like, there are a couple of other trailers.
There were a lot of trailers
a lot
this
of
week.
Them. So I'm going to ask you about one that we didn't talk about, and then we'll go into the ones that we have talked about. So yesterday, Max decided to drop the trailer for the Penguin. So now I understand why they're delaying the Batman till 2026. And it feels like it's because Reeves has gotten fully invested in the Penguin. And I'll tell you, I was shocked at how fucking good this thing looks.
I'm excited for it. Like, I'm not...
Right?
I love the more traditional Bat villains, like the old school way. We both have a fondness for the flair of those villains.
Yes.
But if we're going to take this quote real world approach, like the show Gotham tried to do it and for the most part failed miserably. There were a few like decent things in that show, but overall it was too damn campy for its own good and tried to promote itself as being, you know, more real worldy, and it just didn't succeed. This is more in line with what they were trying to actually do, or what they said they were trying to do. Like, there's no hint of like ridiculousness to it. It's played very, very straight. I mean, Colin Farrell looks, again, unrecognizable. I think I'm really, really going to dig it. I am going to be really, because it's a Penguin series, but it's set, am I right? It's set after the events of the Batman. So I will be kind of shocked if we don't see some kind of glimpse of the character.
Yeah. No, of bats? No, absolutely. Like, I feel like that's what it's hiding right now, is it's hiding like Gordon and bats.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But I feel like that is the reason why Batman got delayed to 2026, is that Reeves, like, took this, and I guarantee you he probably took it to Pattinson and said, look what I'm doing here. Here's the first episode. I really want to redo this and restructure this to put you into it somehow. We don't have to have you in everything. We don't even have to have you like as a force, but as a co-star, occasionally special guest showing up to pop it. And, you know, like, who's not going to, like, after you see that trailer, who's not going to want to play it? Because it literally looks like I've heard Greg Fraser is still the DP on this. Reeves has gone from directing the first two episodes to wanting to direct all 8 episodes. And it's just a limited series. He says there's a definitive end, beginning and end of this. And it dovetails into the Batman 2. So with all those factors in, it's like, of course fucking HBO or Warner Brothers is going to be like, you know what, if you can get Pattinson and you can get Jeffrey Wright, like, you know, in on this, fine. We'll delay Batman 2. We'll let you do this thing. Because it's all it's going to do is just, it's going to be a monster hit. Like, I guarantee you, like, just watching it, it looks so fucking good. And it's not like Farrell, like, in these moments, it's not like Farrell is, like, phoning it in. It looks like he's like, oh, shit, I get to do this character, like, over 8 hours? Fuck yeah, I'm going to do this. It looks like it, like, I now understand why. And if we're going to have to wait another year for a Batman movie, but it maintains its kind of like Reeves is just like, give me some time. Let me just do this. Let me entertain myself. Let me go ahead and do this chapter in this way. And then I'll jump over and I'll figured out what I want to tell. And you give him more time. Fuck yeah, I'll do it. I'll sit here and just let him do it. Like, I don't care. What's another year, right? Like, it doesn't, like, if I'm getting quality product, it doesn't matter to me. Like, it really honestly doesn't matter. Like, yeah, this looks quality, you know? Like, just wild. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting that. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, and talk, like, you know, and like, since we're talking about unexpectedness, I did not see in my 2024 bingo card being interested in another Alien movie. But here we are with a teaser trailer. I'm
interested in another Alien movie.
No, man. Well, like, the last two shouldn't even have been called Alien. They should have been called Android. Because, I mean, you know, yeah. Sir Ridley with being up his own ass about, like being in love with Michael Fassbender and androids, and, like, they were not for me. Prometheus and Alien Covenant kind of, like,
massive problems. I'm yes. completely with you on that. But, like, I don't know. There is something about this franchise that even the bad stuff I'm just inherently drawn to. Fortunately, mm-hmm. this does not look like one of the bad things. This looks like it's very much going to be one of the good things. Like, Alien Romulus. It's so funny. Like, before we got a trailer, like, there's been a lot of chatter about the series in the last month mm-hmm. or so. One of the things that came up was in an interview, I think it got misconstrued. Basically, people were saying that, I don't, how do you pronounce his name?
Fede Alvarez.
Yeah.
The director of this one, right?
Yes.
Fede Alvarez.
Said something to the effect of, it came off as, we're ignoring everything that happens after the first Alien film, which I understand, but there's been a lot of that in a lot of franchises. The Alien franchise, the concept is not something where I think you have to, quote, ignore other continuity. I'm down for you ignoring other continuity. The series, if you include the Alien Predator films, ignores its own continuity. I'm 100%. Fine with that. I'm just like, I don't feel like, can't you just tell a story that's just outside the continuity? And that's what they're actually doing.
Because yes.
This movie takes place between the first and the second film. Because there's a giant time gap in between those two films.
80 years. Like, that's the, like, you know, and I just, like, I wanted to get back to the Haunted Mansion aspect of it, and this looks like it is. Like,
yeah.
Give me another one. Like, stop the mythology. Let's go ahead and take it back five steps. And I think that, like, it now makes sense to me, like, the reason why they went with this. And they didn't do fucking, what's his name, Holly, Noah Hawley's version of Alien yet, which I'm thankful for. Like, thank God. Like, because, like, the last thing I need is another up-its-own-ass, like, meditation on bullshit.
If you're going, like, I love Noah Hawley. If you're going to keep doing those movies, though, I think you, like, let Ridley Scott finish what he started there.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. And if you're not going to do those movies, if you're going to do the Predator-type thing and take it in a different direction, this is what you do.
Yeah, it's absolutely what you do. You let somebody who, like, Fede Alvarez, I feel like, is the perfect person to take this on because he's been through the remake grinder. Like, you know, I unlike a lot of people, love the meanness of his Evil Dead remake. Like, I really do love the meanness of it. Like, it is a truly mean horror film, which you don't get too often now. You get bloody, but you don't get mean. And, like, I like that. I like that in my horror. Like, every once in a while, I don't mind a horror movie being cruel and being cruel to its characters. But he's been through that meat grinder. But he's also created stuff on his own and self-contained horror, like Don't Breathe. Like, I feel like Don't Breathe is an alien film, but instead of an alien, it has Stephen fucking Lang in it. Stephen Lang in the most weirdest fucking role that he's ever been in his life. And, like, that kind of concoction, I can see where they chose him to do this. And the big piece of the puzzle for him is that they let him take on his his writer, like the person that actually he works with, the guy that he's worked with for like 10 years. They let him actually take him on as a writer, and they wrote the script together. Rodo Seguyas is his name. And he's worked with Fede on everything. Like, even if his name is not on the Evil Dead, he was the person that did the production rewrites for Fede. He's also the guy who helped him through Don't Breathe and, like, you know, creating the concept and creating all of the stuff. So, like, there's a lot to be said that Ridley let Fede have his writer, have his editor, and then even go as far as to, like, hire his DP and not like push for, like, some kind of continuity from the Ridley end, right? I don't know, man. Like, this one looks like it could be a Prey situation, except for here we're getting it in theaters, right? Like, I think that Fox or 20th Century Studios has finally figured out they can't fucking dump things on Hulu, especially after Prey, because I've heard that the way that they got Trachtenberg back for the next Predator movie is
that it's going to be theatrical. Yeah.
Yes. And they gave him a bigger budget. And if I were
him, as much as, like, he is a fan of that, like, you have to have that line in the sand. Like, you know, you don't want to be the guy that, you know, just makes these director, like, he wants to be a director. He's had movies in theaters. Like, you don't want to keep taking that step backwards. I know streaming is a different thing, and we have a lot of people, you know, including the greatest directors that ever lived, whose movies are, like, become streaming exclusive. But, you know, at some point you got to be like, I'm not going to keep doing this if I can't get a theatrical release. Like, at least give me a couple of weeks to see this on a big screen, you know? And going real quickly, going back to the Noah Hawley thing, his series is still happening. It's just not.
Not right now.
Yeah. Because I know that there's a cast, and I know that, like, he's, because he's also talked about, quote, ignoring the continuity. But I think it's more because his series is going to be set, I think, on Earth, and it's a prequel series. And I think it's just more about how, like, Weyland-Yutani finds out about the aliens.
And it's like he's doing, like, it's weird because I've heard that, well, okay, so, like, I heard that it was supposed to be filmed in Thailand, and it was supposed to be this kind of thing, but then they're having to reconfigure. Part of the reason why they have to reconfigure is because of the creator. And right. like it was very similarly themed to the creator, which, like, talk about weird, right? Like, it's, they're both 20th century films or, like, projects, right? Right hand not talking to the left hand going, hey, by the way, yada, yada, yada. But like you said, there is a cast, it is being produced and stuff, but I don't know, man, like, this is the kind of shit that I don't, like, again, I can do without. I really honestly can. Like, I'm like, everything that I've heard about it, it's just like, no, not for me. Like, this is like, I mean, Alien versus Predator.
If you put Timothy Oliphant in anything, I'm gonna watch it.
But, okay, so, like, you've heard what his role is, right?
I mean, I've read bits and pieces of things.
Yeah.
I've kind of avoided most
major. Okay. I'll let you get surprised and angry when you see what his role is. Because when I heard it, I was like, what? Fucking Noel Hawley, man, and his fucking stupid fucking bullshit. Like, I'm sorry, but I mean, like, that's the way that I feel about a lot of his shit that he does. It's just like, okay, I know you want to be weird and kooky and bullshit like that, but you know what? Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Fucking shoot the arrow straight, motherfucker. Don't fucking do this Robin Hood. Oh, lolly-doo. Whee! Like, sometimes I just want utilitarian. I want Walter Hill. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, Walter Hill was like utilitarian. Like, give me the thing, right? Like,
well, and like, that's what this movie looks like is going to be. Like, it is a back to basics thing, you know.
Scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Do the thing, like, give me a scene that's on par with a chest burster. That's shocking.
I mean, the face huggers have not been scary since the first Alien movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally just like a jump scare every time. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's really figured out how to, and so much so that they just went away from even trying to do it. And I get, like, it's a complicated puppet. But, like, you watch that trailer, like, it gave me, there was there's been several Alien games, but there's I can't remember which game it was. It was on the Super Nintendo that Ryan and I used to play all the time.
Okay.
And the facehuggers would scare the shit out of us, because you'd just be roaming around the halls in the dark, and this thing would just, like, crawl and, like, jump into your face, you know? And, like, it gave me, like, that kind of vibe of, like, oh, shit, I'm terrified of the facehuggers now. Like, I can't wait to see this movie.
I really can't either. Like, I'm extremely excited for this because, like you said, it's back to basics. It's like everybody has put so much on Ridley Scott's Alien, but if we go back, and this is going to be something that we talk about in a little bit with our main feature, because I feel the same way about what we're going to talk about, the big thing that we're going to be talking about, as I do about this, about, like, and it was something that I didn't put my finger on until watching that movie, which is that you don't have, like, sometimes it's necessary to streamline it and go back to basics. Like, sometimes, like, if we go back to Alien, and we go back to 1979. The reason why it was a hit, because it was scary as fuck. And it was set in a place that you didn't know. And everybody has put so much into that movie in the 50 years or since, or not 50, we're not that old, in the 40 years that it, like the 40 to 45 years that it's been, they've, we as critics and we as people have adorned it with the level of complexity. We like, it's still a very basic streamlined movie, right? It's stylish. It's beautiful. It has just enough space of the unknown. Like, you don't get the whole story of the alien, right? And that's what makes it terrifying. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I feel like this is exactly, is mimicking that, is that we're getting back to the streamline of it. And like, let's just scare the shit out of people and we'll make the best movie possible and we'll leave gaps in there purposely, right? I like that. And I like this concept of like, okay, let's make a scary space movie. Fuck. I mean, like, wow, what a novel concept. It's like a Predator movie. Like, let's make a Predator movie where there's truly prey and there's truly people that you, that have to fight against, like harrowingly fight against a Predator.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not just a jokey thing. Wow. That's a novel concept. I don't know why we do this, like gussy things up and put things on there that we don't need to. I mean, we know why.
Actually, that's something I definitely want to get into when we talk about Ghostbusters. But
yes,
real quickly, two other trailers, Star Wars Acolyte. Yeah. Looks great. We'll know a little bit more about it in a couple of weeks because there's going to be an extensive preview if you decide to go see The Phantom Menace. In yes. theaters, you're going to see an extensive preview of Star Wars Acolyte. So I feel like we'll have more to talk about. Did you text me? They should have just called the show The Rise of the Sith. Was it you that texted me that?
No, I think that might have been Spencer.
Okay. Somebody texted me that, yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
It definitely was that. So what are we putting the bets on if we're going to get Dark Pelagius?
I mean, Pelagius. Yeah, I'm assuming it's coming.
Yeah.
And since we're about to go into another, like, oh, it's a sequel from something we grew up watching.
Up with, yes.
Beetlejuice, which Juice. Is a stupid name. what did you, like, real quickly, what did you think about the trailer?
It's just a style trailer, right? Like, it's yeah. not, it's an announcement trailer, and it's to kind of, like, I will say this much, like, it's really fucking weird how good Michael Keaton looks as Beetlejuice. Like, there hasn't yeah. been a day. Like, it's like, yeah, of course, it's like 25 or it's 30, or like it's close to 40 years old, right? Like, and that's the scary thing, right? Like, 1988 and 2024, it's closer to like 40 years than it is 30 years. Man, he looks fucking good. Like, he looks really yeah. good. I'm gonna wait and see. I'm excited. I'm really excited because
seeing Tim Burton's interviews after the fact have me more excited. I like Beetlejuice just fine. There are people who it's almost a religious experience for them, and which I've never really understood. But I think a lot of that also has to do with the cartoon because that had a huge, like,
yes.
cultish kind of following, which it's so vastly different from the movie that it just blows my mind, much like Ghostbusters.
But we're going to get into that in a minute, too.
Seeing Tim Burton talk about, like, going back to, like, specific things like stop motion animation and relying less on computer effects and like being more hands-on, and like he seems actually passionate about it, which gives me hope because in my opinion I didn't see was it Big Eyes or was that the name of the movie? I didn't see that one because by then I'd just given up on Tim Burton. But for me, he hasn't made a worthwhile movie since Big Fish.
I think that's the apex of him, and then it broke him. Like, it literally broke him. I don't know, like, what kind of, like, it's such a father and son movie, and like
it's a fucking perfect movie. I adore that movie, and that's 20 years ago. that movie
came absolutely out. Absolutely. And so, like, it's weird because it's like, actually, that one, and I have huge affection for Sweeney Todd because I love the I love the musical.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I feel like Tim Burton doing Sweeney Todd is just like, we're going to do Sweeney Todd. We have to get Tim Burton because it's like he is the child of what this was doing.
You know, exactly. Like, You're right. The Grand Guignol, it's very much so like
the origins of Sweeney Todd. He doesn't have to do anything. He can just step into it and just direct the play. Like because it is like where he gets his sensibilities from. Like, it just, you know, it's like he was the child of, you know, the play of Sweeney Todd, you know? But yeah, you know, Charlie and the, which, let's Charlie see. Yeah. Oh. That was directly after Big Fish. Corpse Bride, I think I saw once.
It's okay.
Sweeney Todd, Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, Frankenweenie, I didn't see. Big Eyes, that is. And Mrs. Peregrine, Dumbo, and then he directed four of the Wednesday episodes.
Yeah. On Netflix. supposedly he's going to come back for the second season whenever they get around to it. So, yeah, like, you know, it's been a long time since I've liked something from Burton. Like, I have affection for Dark Shadows just because it's so campy and it's so kind of like, you know, it is what it is. If you've ever seen that movie, it is what it is. And if you like it. If you don't, you don't. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I feel like Burton, like, had the perfect, like, partnership with a woman, like, with a female actress in Michelle Pfeiffer. And he never reconnected with her in anything after Batman Returns. It's like it was like the kind of apex of things for him with female like leads, even though many would say that like you know, somebody like Winona Ryder or other people like what's her name, the one that he married for a while, oh God, what's her name, one that was in Fight Club, the one that played Corpse Bride, Helen Bonham Carter, was a thing. But I don't think so. Like, I feel like Michelle Pfeiffer was like the thing, and like, she is so good in Dark Shadows, it's not even funny. So, like, but all to say, Beetlejuice, I feel is going to be one of those things that it's really going to depend. It's going to be like the movie itself, right? Like it made me feel really good and really safe that they got Burton, or they got Elfman to come back too. Because he's such a big, like, I feel like he is just a bigger part of this combination of things as anybody, like, as any star of the movie, right? So it's going to matter. It's like, what's really going to matter to me more than anything else is the story. Like, what are they doing? What are they telling 40 years later?
I assume that the funeral they're at is the funeral for her dad. They're bringing him back.
Well, you can't bring him back, right? Like, I mean, isn't he in jail now? Isn't Jeffrey Jones in jail?
Yeah, if he's not, I mean, it's, you know, would be surprising. So. But,
yeah, I mean, you know, I like Jeffrey Jones, like, is like one of those guys that is just like, oh, you found out about what he did, and you're like, okay, that is a terrible fucking man. So yes, please, get him out of here. He's still in possession. I think he's still in prison.
Yeah, his last screen credit was Deadwood, the movie, back in 2019.
So. Oh wow, yeah, and that was before I think the whole thing, right?
I think it was certainly filmed before, and then like I think stuff started really, really coming to light as that movie was coming out, and they just weren't gonna edit him out of it. So, because I mean, it was coming on HBO, wasn't like a going to a theater's release. So, But yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a shame the dude had a hell of a career, but it's just like, oh no, you are a piece of shit.
Exactly. No, he was like 5 years probation, I guess, and registered in as a sex offender. So he didn't do prison time. But okay. Yeah, please let's put him in the grave, like what you were saying. Like I'm curious about like certain things about how this is going to play out. So, but I mean, I love Beetlejuice. Like Beetlejuice is one of my favorite films. Like, you know, so and it makes sense, right? Like, I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan, so of course, like, this would be one of those movies. Like, I'm very curious about this all. So, like,
I'm really, really curious about Willem Dafoe and Monica Bellucci. Like, that's two things I'm just like, didn't see that coming. I mean, it makes sense. They're definitely Burton type people. You know, yeah. Like somebody that he would work with. So yeah. Willem Dafoe in a Beetlejuice sequel, like, I'm very, very interested to see what, because like his character on IMDb isn't even named, so like, yep. I don't know. I won't spoil who Monica Bellucci's playing. If you don't want to know, don't look at IMDb. So
yeah, no, I already know who she's playing, so but yeah, you know,
I'm gonna go see it. I like I said, I enjoy the first movie. I don't have like the devotion, like I certainly don't love it as much as I know you do, but like I enjoy it, so you know, I'm gonna go see it. But so all of that build up, 2 hours of build up for us to talk about Ghostbusters for 30 minutes. So we both got to go see yesterday Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Yes.
So I got to the theater and was shocked that there was an Ecto-1 replica car outside my theater in my little ass town. That was awesome. I didn't see any Ghostbusters cosplay, but I went to a late show. There wasn't a lot of people. Like I live in a pretty small town, so like I think the people at the theater get pissed when people show up for the 9 o'clock shows because they're like, I just want to go home. Like, there's nobody in the theater when we leave. There's like one person to lock the door behind us.
Yeah.
But so all the like if there were cosplayers, they were probably in like the 7 o'clock show.
Okay. I saw it at a 6 o'clock show, so it was Kid Central.
Yeah.
Including a baby who cried during some of the scarier moments.
There's some stuff I was just like, oh, I thought this was gonna be even more kid friendlier than the last one. And
it is,
I feel like it was
not
a lot scarier than the last one was.
No, absolutely. It definitely wasn't you know, it definitely was not it was kid friendly, but okay. So like, let me say this, like, I've been on record. We've talked about this, how I disliked the first reboot, like the first, like, you know, the Afterlife. I just did not work for me in any way, shape or form. That being said, the Frozen Empire is totally my fucking jam. Like, this totally feels more like, like my wife said it perfectly. She's like, this is literally a two-part, like this is like a two-part episode of the animated series, where you had a random adventure to get everybody together to set the table, and then you get the second part, which is the actual story that they wanted to tell. And this is better than the first half, because it's literally everything was set up in the first one to do whatever they wanted to do in this one. And this one is overstuffed with everything that I would want. Like, so like we talked about Beetlejuice, like, you know, the animated series briefly. I feel like, okay, so like, I wanted to know your opinion, because I know, like, I feel this wholeheartedly that this movie feels like more of a homage and a love letter to the animated series than it does to Ghostbusters Prime. Though it still does feel like Ghostbusters Prime, there's just the overstuffedness that Aykroyd wanted in the original, that's very much so feels like it's here.
So this is where you and I will differ. Okay. I did enjoy Afterlife. I don't think it was like brilliant, but I did really, really enjoy it. One of the things I enjoyed the most about Afterlife was that it was about new characters. Like, it did bring back an old concept, but I enjoyed getting to know the new characters. A lot of people, not saying you, but I've heard very specific like gripes about like, oh, well, you made it seem like we were going to get the original Ghostbusters and they're only in it for like the last 5 minutes. I appreciated that. So going into this, I was kind of excited like we're going to get a little bit more of them. But there's so much going on in this fucking movie. Nobody has time for anything. I enjoyed it, but I think there was way too much in this movie. Like, for starters, like, two characters you can excise completely because it doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense why they're there to begin with. Lucky and Podcast. Like,
yes,
I enjoyed them in the first movie. I get that you wanted to bring them back for a sequel. You shoehorn them into a plot that doesn't fucking need them. It just doesn't. Like,
no,
that's time you could have had with the other characters. Because I think, I don't love Finn Wolfhard, but I feel really bad for the kid, because holy shit, every person involved with Ghostbusters Afterlife heard, oh my God, McKenna Grace is so good in this movie. I want to see more of her. So all we get of the kids is fucking McKenna Grace. And the reason it works in the first movie is because she's not the main focus. She's such a focus here. It's a little... I thought it was a little weird. And I know it sounds like I'm bashing the movie, but I didn't like her angle in the movie at all. I just didn't really like any of that.
So I understood where it came from. You remember how I said, like, I really liked it. It's overstuffed, but there are a few plot things that I do not like. Her stuff, I'll agree with you, because, okay, so, like, here's the problem is that they take this wonderful, like, young actress, and they turn her into what Hollywood thinks is a non-binary, possibly LGBTQ character.
Yeah.
But their version of it is this perfect 14-year-old teenager that's kind of awkward, but... she's beautiful. She has a stupid wig on. I like that wig. Jesus Christ, that wig was like, it was bad in the first one. It's even worse in this one because they're literally took Harold Ramis's hair as a model for it. And then the glasses, but then like,
but then they cast James Acaster to be that character.
Yes.
For the, and I think again, James Acaster is somebody you could have gotten a lot more time with if you cut out these other two ancillary characters. I enjoy James Acaster's stuff.
Well, he's literally like the, like, and this is where the animated series comes in. He's literally Egon from the animated series, including the stupid hair, the blonde hair, the glasses, everything. Like, you were right. Like, but it's weird because, like, everything about the character is what Hollywood executives think, like what a non-binary character is, what a what a maturing young lady who's figuring out what her sexuality is. And I know it sounds very weird and creepy because it fucking is in this movie. Yeah. Because like this whole thing is like, the ghost, the whole necrophilia, ghost love thing. Yeah. I'm like,
And not in the yes, it's weird now, but like in the first movie, there's this scene where this like ghost like descends on Ray in the firehouse, and it's very like, did he just have sex with a ghost?
Yes,
it's in a montage, and it's like 15 seconds. This is a major subplot of the entire movie, is that she seems to be romantically interested in this ghost who is going to use her to bring about the end of the world so that she can like cross over and see her family again. And like the plot itself is so overstuffed with like, we have to explain all this stuff. And I love Ghostbusters, but like, I also can recognize it's not a perfect movie. There's a lot of shit in it that doesn't really vibe, you know? Yes. And it's like, but they also don't waste a lot of time trying to explain anything to you. Like Egon gets to spout like this mumbo jumbo, like scientific stuff because he's Egon, not because they're actually trying to explain to you how it works. It's funny because it's Egon. And like, there was a moment in this movie where Ray at the end is explaining something, and Venkman is just like, we trust you. We don't care why it works. Just do it.
Yeah.
Like, and I absolutely felt like that for a lot of the movie. Like, why are you trying to explain all this to me? Like, I don't need this explained, you know? And no. Also, you melt down, why didn't you melt down the entire copper pole and encase everybody's proton pack things in copper or what, like whatever that plan was? It was just, it was a lot of, and that I actually amounts to nothing, because what really helps defeat the demon is the firebender, whatever they call him. Mm-hmm. You know what? I fully support Kamael's attempt to be in every major franchise from our childhood. Like, I'm here for it, man. Yeah. Like, I love it. He's great in Star Wars. He's great in Ghostbusters. He's fun in the Marvel movies. Like, I'm here for it, man. Like, you're great. But, like, there's just so many fucking things going on in this movie that, like, I don't know. It was a lot. I did enjoy it. I didn't hate anything in the movie, but I just felt like it never like stopped to like really give us, the only character we really get to spend time with is her. And the plot we got, for me, like you were talking about, it just really doesn't work and feels weird. And like, we probably sound like all the people that we would rail against, but to me, this is the thing that pisses people off when they talk about, oh, it's some woke bullshit. This is the kind of thing that pisses people off, where it's just like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't understand this. Like, it's not cute. It's not really romantic. It's fucking weird, because they're both supposed to be like 15. Like,
And one's a ghost.
Yeah.
One's a fucking ghost. Like, that was the biggest issue for me, was like, well, one's a fucking ghost, and that's fucking weird. And like, what the fuck are you guys doing? I don't understand this. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay. But
all that said, the OG stuff, I did really enjoy. I hate that there's so many characters that we didn't really have time for anybody. Mm-hmm. I appreciated the Slimer thing a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was, and when he shows back up at the end, I did think Finn Wolfhard's like line reading of like, hey, I know that guy, was really fun.
Yeah.
I weirdly got the biggest kick out of the Ecto C, is that what they call it?
Yeah, the tricycle that was also an animated series, like,
yeah.
Edition.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. It was fun to see William Atherton again. I love that he's the mayor of New York now.
Yes. He's fucking great. He was really great.
I still don't think they gave Ernie Hudson enough to do. I liked that he had a little more, but it still wasn't a lot. There's a lot of really, really good things in this movie. Patton Oswalt, a lot of fun. Like, Kumail stuff, I wasn't being, like, facetious. I really, really enjoy him in this movie. Like, he seems to be having the time of his life. And much like Patton Oswalt, it's like, holy shit, I'm in a Ghostbusters movie. You know?
Right? Like, it's kind of, it's fantastic. Like, I kind of love it that he's, like, at this, like, this whole thing of, like, oh, let's do the thing, right? Like, it's like, this is so good. This is so fucking good.
And I think the action stuff is really great. The effects work is fucking, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. Like, I just loved that, like, it felt more like a Ghostbusters movie to me. It didn't feel like it was an homage to the greatness that is Ghostbusters.
I agree with that.
It's setting up concepts for another movie that eventually we're going to get. I feel like this is going to be a hit because it does the things that I feel like, for the most part, it's like this 80-20 thing where it's like 80% of it works as an entity, right? And then the 20%. Is really doesn't work at all, right? Like, it is not like in any way, shape, or form it works, like that 20%. But for me, at least, it's better than what we had before, which, like I said, really did feel like there was this, it was like too much reverence to the original. And like, I mean, like the whole Gozer thing and like all that stuff, it was like, it was something that I didn't want. I wanted something like this, which was like, and again, this is where I feel like they chose to do something that felt more like the animated series, that it felt overstuffed in a good way, not in a bad way for me. Like, yeah, we didn't get to spend a lot of time with certain characters, but for me, like, the fact that they're creating this world that is a lot more fun than the first movie, and that's the thing that really got to me was that, oh shit, I'm having fun again with a Ghostbusters movie. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's like, oh, this is a lot of fun. Like, this is like, you're bringing back the... what I loved about Ghostbusters, and I didn't even realize that much of what I loved about Ghostbusters, and I think that we kind of discussed this before in the previous thing, my love of things were from the first film and the animated series and nothing else. Like, Ghostbusters 2 for the longest time was just this thing that I was like, oh, well, yeah, that's okay. It wasn't until like probably like the late 90s where I like watched it on HBO and watched it again, and I was like, oh, this is actually kind of like, this is kind of great, right? In its own way. Not like it lost the, like, I feel like what it needs to be scary. Like, there needs to be genuine scares. And I feel like this movie genuinely had like creepy, scary things in it. Which Afterlife didn't, because Afterlife was so much so about Gozer and like basically rehashing like a weird version of the concepts of the first one. And then part two, I mean, it's slime. It's like, let's make a kids movie.
I wish they had just fully embraced the kids aspect, because I think it veers a little... Because you can make a scary kids movie. I think it veers a little too more into the adult thing. Mm-hmm. And when I say kids, I mean like under the age of 12. Like, once you get into this like romantic thing with teenagers, like, especially one's a ghost, like, and you know, I don't have an issue with it, but a lot of people, especially where I live, would be like, I don't want to see a love story about a ghost, a kid ghost and another child. B, yeah. I don't want to see a lesbian relationship or a non-gender or whatever you want to, you know, however they want to label it. They're just, once that gets put out there, they're going to be like, well, I'm not going to see it. So, like, I know representation matters, but this just feels weird. Like, just weird.
It really does. It really, really does. Like that's the concept that I was like, okay. And the worst part about it is that, like, you can see a mile away what they're doing, and it's all, like, it's all for show, right?
Yeah.
And
that's a good way to, like, there doesn't feel like any sincerity is in it at all. It definitely feels like, look at us, aren't we awesome for doing this?
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely.
Which I hate to say that. And again, it sounds like I'm really, really bashing the movie. Overall, I did enjoy it. It's just the whole time I sat there, I was just like, I know I could be enjoying this more if they had made just a few different choices, you know?
Absolutely.
Other than Venkman, like, romance has never been the Ghostbusters thing. And honestly, his romantic stuff has always just been predatory and creepy. So,
yeah, and troubling. Highly troubling.
Yeah. So, like, I guess this is at least not date rapey like in the first movie.
Oh, man, yeah.
but it's still, like, I don't know what it is about this franchise that they can't seem to get away from that. It's like problematic romantic things. And again, stating that the problem here is that, like, you have these ghosts, like, it's a ghost. And I know it's not really necrophilia, but it just feels really, like, a really weird choice, man. Like,
it really does. No, it really does. Like, that was the big, like, everything with McKenna Grace was kind of very weird for me. Cause it just, like, it's weird when in the first film, she's what worked for me, but Finn Wolfhard was not. And in this film, Finn Wolfhard works for me, but McKenna Grace does not.
Yeah.
Like, his whole Slimer thing is fantastic.
It was fun. It was funny. Like, I loved the constant setup. Like, it starts at the beginning with him just being like, I'm 18. I'm an adult now. And they spend the rest of the movie, every time anything comes up, they're just like, well, you're an adult now, right? Fucking figure it out.
Figure it out. Like, that's the best part, is like the deflation of his ego, which, like, to be perfectly honest, I feel like they were allowed to do because of the reactions everybody had to Finn Wolfhard in the first movie, right? Yeah. Like, them trying to make him like this, like, I don't know, like,
so funny. Like, the first movie was very much built on, like, oh, this kid's hot right now.
Yeah.
Like, and it was kind of sort of like, looked like they were building it around him. And since then, he's, I don't want to say cooled off, but, like, I mean, that kind of sort of cooled off. And everybody was so stunned by McKenna Grace that it was just like, oh, we got to make the movie about her. What can we do? Like, let's do this, like lean super heavy into the, like, whatever modern, it's not even modern relationship, whatever that was supposed to be. It just feels weird.
Really does.
I also appreciated what they were trying to do with the animated segment with the backstory, But okay. It felt a little out of place to me. Because, like, we've never had anything. Well, I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen Ghostbusters, too. But I don't feel like there was, like, a weird, like, just, oh, hey, we're going to jump
Toro
in. Yeah. It felt really, really strange to be in there. Like, I appreciated the story. That, mm-hmm. like, I don't have a problem with Ghostbusters. The whole franchise is big on expository. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of expository done by done by Dan Aykroyd. What I really liked about that was it's a new wrinkle into things. Like, there's a lot of new little wrinkles in, though I feel like I feel like this is a little bit of where the director came from, and like I also feel like this very much so tells me that I want Gil Keenan to continue on with this and not Jason Robert.
I completely agree.
Like, I've always liked Gil Keenan. Like, I love Monster House. Like, Monster House is basically an emblem Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I feel like that's why they hired him. He was from Sony family, and he was... he helped out the first one. Like, I mean, him and Reitman are friends, from what I understand. He helped with... Like, he was already in the Ghostbusters lore. It also does help that he made a very little scene movie, but I really enjoyed it, that has Bill Murray in a very different role than he's used to in City of Ember.
Yeah. Nobody fucking saw that movie, man.
No. And I feel like those movies are the type of movies that Murray ends up really adoring and really loving and really kind of teams up with the director. So it makes absolute sense that he would show up. And he shows up in a way that I don't think none of them showed up in the first movie, right? Like, I don't feel like any of them really, like, they were stiff as the CGI Harold Ramis. And thank fucking God they didn't do the CGI Harold Ramis today.
I was worried that that's where we were going with the chess thing.
The chess. Oh,
please
yeah.
do not bring this back. Please don't bring I understand people's complaints with it. It worked on me very well in the first movie. It will not work on me again. I will be very jaded and like to the point of like, I'm going to walk out of this movie because they're pulling some bullshit.
With that being said, for me, like I liked what they did with the legacy cast. I also really liked the whole concept of a family and Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon and their energy.
Talk about somebody who gets nothing to do. Like, Paul Rudd at least gets to do Paul Rudd things, because, you know, Paul Rudd really only plays Paul Rudd. And that's fine. We love Paul Rudd. But Carrie Coon gets absolutely nothing to do. She literally has to be the person that walks into every scene and tells people why they can't do the thing that they're going to do. Like, every fucking scene. Like, I felt so bad for her.
But she elevates that shit to art. Like,
I mean,
literally,
she's very good. But I was just like, oh my God, she does not really get a badass moment. Everybody else kind of gets their badass moment. And I felt like she was very underserved in that area. So,
yes. You're absolutely right. Like, she gets stuck with the mother role.
Yeah.
But
I mean, she gets some stuff at the very beginning. That opening scene, I really, really enjoy.
Yes. That opening scene is, like, that's what I, like, okay, so, like, when I watched it, like, my initial thought, like, after this, they get this Hell's Dragon sewer, or the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon, like, all done, I'm like, this is what I wanted from the first movie. Like, I didn't want, like, an annual like, you know, like we're talking about comic book things, like Afterlife feels like an annual or a, like, you know, oversized edition. Like it's like, you know, the Oklahoma Adventure. Like I could have like, you know, this movie could have been the first movie and have been 2.5 hours, and you add in just enough contextual information to like talk about the Oklahoma incident, and you give me a comic book about that or an animated 20-minute series about it, and I'm fine. I'm like, okay, good. That's great. I love it. Because this is the movie that I wanted. Like, this is a good step in the right direction. Like, this movie at the end of it.
I agree with you. It's a huge step in the right direction. Bringing it back to New York, like, getting, like, most of the nods to the first movie, I think, are really, really good. The one that I didn't like was the library ghost. That was pointless and stupid.
That was crass. That was stupid. Like, let's be honest. Like, they did, that was their single thing of fan service. Like, okay, so, like that I did not love, you know. But here's the thing is, like, this is how you know this movie is working on me. The thing that I found the most fucking annoying in the second, in Afterlife, I adored in this movie, which is the State Puffs. The marshmallows. Oh,
yeah, I thought they used them very, very well. I kept wondering, like, how are they still here? Like, what? And like, you get that one throwaway line of like, yeah, he brought some back from Oklahoma, and I think they're reproducing, and then they're just everywhere.
Where? So, yes.
Yeah, I thought it was used to pretty good effect. But I do see the, like, oh, you just created minions for the Ghostbusters.
Yes. Well, that's what I was going to say, is that, like, it was very ironic that the Despicable Me 4 trailer came up.
Yeah.
Like, when I was watching it, I'm like, first off, I was like, okay, so, like, just a side tangent about the fucking trailers. Like, they were playing kiddie trailers and hardcore horror trailers on my fucking...
Yeah.
Did you see, like, the thing for Tarot? Like,
yeah, first off, I was like, what fucking, do you think that, like, yeah. I understand it's a mixed audience for this movie, but, like, maybe don't traumatize the shit out of the kids with the trailers. Like, I'm pretty sure some 10-year-olds are coming to see this movie. Like,
well, my favorite part about it was there was a parent with a younger child in, and as soon as Tarot came on, the father was like, do not look at the screen. Do not look at the screen. I don't need to be up at 10 o'clock, like 11 o'clock at night, because you had a bad night. Stop looking at the screen. What are you doing? Like, he literally was getting upset, and I'm like, wow. Yeah. But then again, you watch Tarot, and it's like, okay, first off, like, fuck that trailer for ruining everything.
I mean,
for that
it's movie. The whole movie.
Exactly. I was like, okay, I'm like, okay, I don't need to see that fucking movie anymore. Why? Why should I see that movie anymore? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, you've already ruined the whole trailer for me. Like, so, like, yeah. But, I mean, I found that funny that there were these super horror movies on with kiddie movies. I was like, so that's how you're doing it?
Yeah, it's such a weird choice, man.
But what was funny to me, like, to be perfectly honest, what was really funny to me was... what was the whole thing of, like, the whole thing, like, god damn it, when was he, where they're like, like it prepared me for the minions, because I saw Despicable Me 4, and I was like, you know what, I hate admitting it, because there's so many fucking annoying assholes that love the minions, but I really do love the minions. Like they are the pop, and like, let's be honest, they kind of changed animation and kids films for everything over the last 20 years, because, or 15 years, because you have to have those cutesy characters now. Well, like in a movie that do random side tangent things, or else it's not a kids movie anymore. Like, that's kind of crazy, right?
I still think that the people that created the Rabbids should sue the people that created the Minions.
Oh,
but,
fuck yes.
but so the one thing I appreciate about the mini Stay Puft little creatures is, so the Minions, you get heavy into like the old school, like Bugs Bunny, like violent comedy. The Stay Puft guys take it to a whole different level of like
self-harm.
Yeah. I mean,
self-harm.
Like that one has his arm in the old school pencil sharpener and it's just shredding it. Yay! And I'm like, you know, I appreciate that you can do this with these characters and it comes off as like, oh, that's funny. And it's actually fucking terrifying. There's yes. a mid credit scene.
Yes.
And where they hijack a Stay Puft truck. One of them takes the fucking lighter and just burns it into his head. And I'm like, this is, like, if you were watching a person do this, you would be on the verge of throwing up. And it's you're just like, oh, that's funny.
But the thing that makes it funny is that he still has his little smiley face.
Yeah.
As he's doing
he's just like, laughing and just setting himself on fire. It's like, this is how this is horrifying.
Literally horrifying.
I really like that you can just do, like, have that level of, like, thing. And it's the kind of thing that you couldn't do in the 80s. We're always talking about things we can't do now. You couldn't do this in the 80s because somebody would stand up and go, can't do that. Kids will think that they can burn themselves with cigarette lighters. And now we're just like, oh, it's an animated character. You can do whatever you want to with it. Like, as long as it's, you know, not sexual. Like, it's really, really funny and so, like, crass and disgusting. And because they're cute, it just comes off as funny. I'm with you. I really enjoyed them in this movie. I thought they were played perfectly. Like, there was so little of them. You know,
they were the right amount of pop to make it pop. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like their level of engagement was like less than the first Despicable Me, but not by much. Like, they had three or four scenes, and what I appreciated is that they used them to integrate into the story. Like, you know, the whole thing of like the ball that the MacGuffin, the glowy Marvel thing that they use that's at the center of the first half of the movie. And I appreciated that they used it, like they used the Stay Puffs as a tool to tell the story, right? Like, that was kind of really nice to me that they just didn't use them for comedy bits, that they integrated them into the story so well. I really enjoyed that. As much as anything else in the film, like, I really did like that they took, like, my favorite part about the movie is that they took everything, I guess they took notes. Like, that's the thing about a sequel that I feel that honestly never happens, is, like, unless they're the best of the best, is that they take notes and they realize what worked, what didn't, and at least in my estimation, they kind of course corrected. Now, again, there were things that they overcorrected created issues. Well, like, they created
the McKenna Grace thing is way overcorrect. Like, she's still fine and she's still great in the part, but it's such a huge overcorrect. It's one thing when it's an episode of a television show, it's like, oh, this is this character's episode. But when it's a movie franchise in your own, like, hopefully this is on track to make about $40 million opening weekend. Hopefully a little bit more, you know, hopefully they see it as a, you know, a profitable thing and continue with the franchise, and we can, like, continue down this path and get better and better. But, like, if it fails, then it's like, oh, well, our last Ghostbusters movie till they reboot the franchise again is mostly about this weird romantic relationship between this girl and a ghost. And like it, yeah, it's just a little strange, which, you know, is in the theme song, but
which, okay, can we talk about that?
I liked it.
I loved it.
I thought it was adorable. If honestly, if anybody else does it, like if it had been one of the OG cast doing it, it would have felt a little fucking weird. Yeah. But Paul Rudd is able to, I think if it's reversed, I think Carrie Coon could do it too. But Paul Rudd is such the lovable doofus. Like, he absolutely pulls that off.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like, it's weird because, like that's something that I used to do to my wife. Like, I still occasionally do it to my wife where I'll look at her and I'll say something, but it's a lyric. Like, and I'll say it in deathly seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's like, I know that that's something that dudes do. Like that's just a fucking thing. Like, you know, but to have him do it there and have him do it in the movie. And that's another thing. Okay. Like, let's talk about the fact that they used the footage properly.
I like all that. I like how they made like it all exists. You know, like the video for them like dancing in the street was weird because you're like, how does this exist in the movie? Like it's like if you try to like force everything into a continuity, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But then like you recontextualize it in this way and it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Right, it does. Like, it's like, okay,
this, I mean, they even showed footage from the second movie with the Statue of Liberty walking through the streets of New York. Like, you know, I thought they genuinely did a good job of like notating things in the franchise.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
no, like go ahead and I'll add in my little bit that I loved. That
overall, like, it was just a mixed bag for me. I appreciated Afterlife more for trying to be different rather than, like, I don't love that they lean back into the Gozer thing. That's the one thing about Afterlife that I'm less like, yeah, I wish you'd have just done something more original than that. But everything else I genuinely enjoyed in Afterlife. But this does feel, I'm with you, it feels like a step in the right direction to kind of give you something new, but also something familiar. It just doesn't completely land for me. Okay. You know, but I definitely think it's enjoyable and worth going to see. And honestly, if you've got the $40, I didn't, and they were sold out anyway. Get you a Ghost Trap popcorn bucket. It's fucking cool.
That is cool. Like, to be perfectly honest, like in iChat, they were sold out at my place too. Like, I think everybody wanted one of those. But like, I will say this much, like another big thing that I feel that it get, like what the first one did perfectly, that the second one kind of did, but went hammy on it. This one and the 2016 one just kind of, or like the 2016 and Afterlife didn't do, which I loved, was bureaucracy. Like, it's a very weird, low-key kind of critique about bureaucracy that, like, you know, that I appreciated Walter Peck being, like, you know, being the thing that is bureaucracy in this one, because he absolutely would be. I totally see him being, like, the mayor of New York, right?
Did you hear somebody in the crowd at the end call him Dickless?
Dickless, yes.
I mean, that's one of my favorite lines in Ghost, until Dickless here shut off our containment. Is this true? Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Which is so great. But Atherton being game, like, that's the thing that I loved, is that Atherton was game for this. Like, it wasn't even like he had a second thought about this, right? Like, it was like, no, absolutely, I'll do this. Like, wow, like, you're kind of fucking great, right? Like he got the joke. Like, and I was happy about that, because, like, the happiest moment for me was seeing, I didn't realize he was the mayor. Like, I haven't, like, I watched the first preview.
Yeah, I knew he was going to be in it, but I didn't know he was going to be the mayor. That was a shock.
Yeah, and I'm just like, Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. Like, let's do this, right? Like, let's fucking I like that it's a good step in the right direction and into a larger universe. To me, that's ultimately where I'm forgiving of it, because it was like I said, like, and it's funny to watch, like how we had such opposite reactions to. Now, I did pregame and I watched the movie again, and I think I even told you, I was like, you know what? It's not as bad as I think it was. I'm like, still creepy CGI. Harold Ramis could not, like, let's not do that, please, ever again. I don't even want to see it there. Like, the people, like, I almost feel like the movie's ending was a studio note. After they saw how good the movie was, they were like, well, you know what? Maybe we can get people, like, we can get the original cast back. Let's pay them a lot of money and then get them for a second one, because we know this is going to be kind of a big hit. And it was, because it really feels like an afterthought, right? Other than the Dan Aykroyd of it all, which, yeah, you know, I love Dan Aykroyd as much as I love Ernie Hudson. But I also love Dan Aykroyd because he's a big old weirdo, right? Like, he's like this is the stuff he believes in so much.
He's doing what he should be doing in this movie. It's just, you know, and I love the conversation he has with Winston, where he's like, this is how I want to spend my golden years. These are the things that I love. Like, this is what I love doing. Like, I know I can't get out there and, like, run around like I could, but, like, I love the occult. This is what I'm into. And so this is what I want to spend the rest of my life doing, you know?
This is what I want to do with my golden years.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, like, I didn't realize how much I loved their vibe, him and Ernie Hudson's vibe, more to the point to where if next movie Murray decides he doesn't want to do it, I'm okay with that, as long as you give me Ernie Hudson and Dan Aykroyd being like,
they have one of my favorite scenes in the first movie.
Yes, I love his vibe. Like, do you believe in God? Yeah, I love his vibe. Like, I love that whole, it's both funny, real, and actually scary, right? That scene where they're talking about revelations.
Yeah.
It feels like two friends.
Yeah. It's one of the best scenes in that movie. Like, it's one of the things I think about when I think about that movie, is their conversation. Well,
it's also like, you know, what's funny is, like, whenever I think of End of Days, I actually think of that movie, like that, like that moment, like, in a weird way. Like, I've never talked about this, but in a weird way, that scene is kind of like Adam at like 5 or 6 seeing that for the first time. And like his brain, along with the Russian Cold War at its height in fucking goddamn Reagan and his fucking bullshit, and fucking the other one, Gorbachev with his bullshit. Like, that probably is what started me spinning with my, like, you know, as fucking Sting used to say, the Russians love their children too, right? And like the worry, I don't know if you ever had it, but I was a kid that constantly asked my parents, like, after that and Red Dawn, it was like a perfect storm, right? Fucking 84, dude. Where I was like, are the Russians going to kill us? Like, I literally would ask that to my parents every night. And they'd have to assure me, no, you're crazy. And meanwhile, they'd shut the door and I'd be like, yeah, but, you know, remember what Ray said in Ghostbusters? And how it was like, all the things would happen. And I'm like, then the bombs. And like, I was a crazy kid. But like, that moment, like, it was a core moment for me, like, as a kid, like that scene. But I loved them together. Like, they, like, their energies together. And it still proves even now, like, that the whole golden age speech. It's like, these guys feel like they've been friends for like 50 years. Like, more so than, it's weird because it feels more like they feel more like organically friends than the Vakeman character is friends with Stance, like with Ray, right? Like, it's like, huh? Like, of course Winston is going to be the one in part two that does birthday parties with Rey, right?
Yeah.
Like, it makes absolute sense. Like, it makes sense that, like, you know, Winston, once Winston, like that's one of the more, like, that's like the kind of thing that I love, like, that made me smile, was that, like, when you find out that Winston has been taking care of Rey basically since the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like that's like embedded story that like is a one-off line, but it allows me to go into my head and go, man, that's their friendship. That's like 50 years of friendship. Like they've been friends since, like, you know, since Rey, like since they hired him, and they've just taken care of each other. They have each other's backs. Yeah. You know, it's just kind of like, it's a great moment that I hope is extended in the next movie, whatever the next movie is.
Yeah, I hope they get to build on a lot of stuff here.
I
do think it's definitely, it's weird that this franchise is revived after sitting dormant forever, basically, mm-hmm. and then failed reboot, and now we have a revived franchise. But like, I hope it doesn't go the way of the original Ghostbusters and we get two and then it's gone, you know.
Yeah. You're right, I do too.
Yeah. Well, shit, we didn't even get to talk about X-Men 97, but we both did watch it. There's another episode coming. I think we can get into a lot of X-Men 97 stuff next week because I have some thoughts on it. And I want to rewatch the first two episodes because, it's really good.
It really is.
We can get into that next week so we don't run into a four-hour podcast.
No, absolutely. And I'm going to ask if you could see about at some point watching Roadhouse Jake Gyllenhaal style.
I was just looking at that and I'm like, I was thinking, I kind of want to watch it.
And we'll have a conversation about it. But as long as your expectations are low, I think that you're going to have a fun time. Like, I'm really honestly. So, and it's not even like, it's not bad. Like, I feel like people that are like shitting on this one are just not realizing that Roadhouse had the Roadhouse 1.0 had the same damn reaction that everybody's having right now with this Roadhouse. Like, it took 20 years for it to become a cult classic, right?
Yeah, it was not an instantaneous, like, it did not make a lot of money. It was that Patrick Swayze showing up in a movie every 3 months kind of thing during that 90s era of, like, hey, he's popular, but like his movies aren't making $100 million at the box office. So, but they would fly off the rental shelves, man.
Hell yeah, they would.
All right. So go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com podcast wise. Although it's a little quiet, we just wrapped up talking about Ted Lasso. We finally finished season 3. And there'll be some Star Wars stuff coming soon and more Game of Thrones stuff coming. I didn't watch those trailers. If you want to read what I write, which there will be stuff posting soon, you can check all that out over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where we are set to start to unleash some stuff from Logan and his column, Moving Pictures. It will be happening and you will see it on social. You can read my reviews. I've had a pretty good run the last couple of weeks with some really great content. You can go ahead and read it. I'm going to suggest that you guys, like, if you're into horror and not Ghostbuster horror, but real horror, like, not to say that it isn't real horror, all horror is a real horror, but like, if you want a true blue horror movie, check out Immaculate, Sydney Sweeney's like big swing. Like, and like, okay, so for you pervy, like the pervy ones, no, she does not get naked. And it's not about that. Like, this is a genuinely good, dreadful horror movie. I wrote a praiseworthy review because it goes hard. Like, the ending is like a 3-minute single shot. And some of the best like one of the best movie horror moments I've seen in a long time. So yeah, go check that out. Check out Roadhouse, because we'll probably be talking about it in X-Men 97, like you said. I've got a bunch of, like I said, reviews up. I've been very horror-fueled because I, like, a lot of my stuff is horror-based right now because of the content that I've been getting. But just go ahead and check it out.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week, and we'll see you guys then.
Talk to you soon. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.